to train bigger, badder, harder, better, faster, stronger. I did it. Bigger, badder types of AI. Hello, hello. This is Dana. This is Words That Move Me. And this is going to be one of those, every time you teach something is an opportunity to learn it deeper yourself type of episodes. I'm by no means an AI specialist, but through my work with the Choreographers Guild and through some deeper dives as a solo human being operating in the world with curiosity, I am learning a lot about AI, and I'm kind of jacked about it. I'm actually very interested in this subject, and I want to talk about what I have learned with a specific focus on dance, dancers and choreographers, and what AI means to us. Also, in doing that, I think I can probably demystify some AI concepts through the use of dance analogies, which we love. We're going to talk about terminology, which is pretty neutral stuff, some heartening information, and then also some kind of scary shit. First, let's do the winnings. Today, I am celebrating 1 year to the day of possibly my favorite music video experience. I got to play a heart surgeon. Yep. Open heart surgery. In Hozier's music video for All Things End, which was choreographed by the one and only Jillian Myers with Damian Gomez at the assist. And I want to super shout out the rest of the medical team, AKA dancers. Chris, Sasha, Allison, Antavius, you guys are a dream. Jilly, thank you for that gift. Wow. 1 year ago today, we shot that. That's crazy. I still love it very much. That's me. That's what's going well in my world. Now you go. Are you celebrating any cool anniversaries of work or things? I usually just check my phone and it tells me what I was doing a year ago. Try that. Congratulations. I'm so glad you're winning. Okay, let's just dig into the AI of it, shall we? If you've ever observed a human being, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a relatively observant human being. If you've ever observed someone over age 12, such as myself, you've probably noticed we're more or less attached to this. If we're engaging with the world, we're also engaging with this. People could argue that the screen types of technology are deeply ingrained, deeply embedded in our day-to-day lives. I wear mine like a purse. It's how we digest our media. It's how many of us work and many of us play. You understand this because here you are right now digesting this media on a screen type device, tablet, computer, phone, whatever. And while you are doing that, while you are listening, watching to this podcast, AI systems are devouring data from you and everything on the searchable internet to train bigger, badder, harder, better, faster, stronger. I did it. Bigger, badder types of AI. Now, before we get into the kind of big ideas, I want to talk about the basics. And to do that, I'm going to pretend like I'm teaching dance. My favorite style of dance, period, and my favorite style of dance to teach is locking. And whenever I teach a locking class or a movement that was inspired, a combo that was inspired by movement from the locking vocabulary, I usually start by asking, who created locking? And if they know, they erupt by saying, Don Campbell Lock Campbell. And then I ask when, and if they know, they say 1971. And then I throw them a curveball and I say, what was going on in the world at that time? And then it usually takes a couple guesses, but eventually somebody will say the Vietnam War. And I'll say, yes, why does that matter? And then I say, because people were being drafted during the Vietnam War. And this was disproportionately affecting people from marginalized communities. Meanwhile, Don, a black man, was creating and sharing a dance that involves literally giving yourself five. Like, one of the fundamental moves in locking is to give yourself five. Like, the equivalent of a demi-plié in ballet is a give yourself five in locking. And if that isn't the definition of resilience and resistance, then I don't know what is. And that is one of the many reasons why I'm obsessed with locking. I just love it so much. Now, let's move into finding out why I'm obsessed with AI. Not obsessed. It does have kind of a sticky origin story, although it's not quite as riveting and nowhere near as funky as locking is, but still interesting nonetheless. So here we go. Who created AI? A computer scientist, turns out, a guy by the name of John McCarthy. At least that is the person who coined the term artificial intelligence. Thanks, John McCarthy. When did this happen? In 1955. What was going on in the world in 1955? Not locking. Not yet. That was 71, if you do recall. See how? Learning on learning. Anyways, in 1955, Rosa Parks was refusing to sit in the back of the bus. Martin Luther King Jr. started the 381-day boycott of the Montgomery bus system. 1 year later, we had the desegregation of public transportation. That's fierce. In the context of technology, however, I don't know how to make the year 1955 sticky. I don't know any context other than that it is almost 30 years before the invention of the internet itself. That's how long the concept of AI has been around. It's not new, but it is looming. It is imminent. It is impending. It is now. Okay, so here we go. General terminology. This is a wrist roll. That, off camera currently, is also a wrist roll. This is a SAM point. That is a tag. Many tags back to back is called a pace. Oh, this is a muscle man. This is a lock, which is very awkward sitting down. We could call it lockward. And a personal favorite of mine is a lock lock. Double. Super cute. Oh, and of course, the aforementioned give yourself five. Sitting and locking. Wow. I could do better. Anyways, those are the building blocks of locking. Now I'm going to tell you the seven types of AI. Three of them are capability types based on how the AI learns and how it applies its knowledge. Four are functionality types that have to do with how it applies what it has learned and interacts with its environment. In plain speak, all AI can be sorted or explained by its capability and its function. In dance speak, if AI was dancers at a big open call audition and it was time to go in groups, there would be seven groups total, but two rounds. The first round would be split into three groups based on level, and the second round would be split into four groups based on function. For this analogy, we'll call it style. So first round of groups, one through three, is capability-based, split into like beginning, intermediate, advanced. That's how I'm kind of thinking of that. Everyone in the room will go in one of those three groups, beginner, inter, advanced. And then the second round is four groups, which is based on functionality. And again, for this analogy, we'll call it style. For example, the first of those four groups might be freestylers. And then the jazz choreography types. And then after that, maybe the contemporary choreography types. And then after that, the hip hop choreography types. All of the people in the room will go in a group based on style. And all the people in the room get to go in a group based on capability. This analogy might not hold up much longer than this very preliminary look at it. All I'm trying to explain is that all AI can be explained by its capability. There are three types, and its functionality, of which there are four types. Whoa. Good. Moving? We're moving. Okay. The first group of our capability round, we'll call them the beginners, is called narrow AI. Narrow AI focuses on a narrow task and has narrow limitations. This one's easy. Like, homegirl, I'm not going to say her name because she'll interrupt the podcast, or Alexa. Can we just also take a pause to recall when Siri was new and we all thought it was weird that her name was Siri and that you would talk to your phone. And now we all do that 45 times a day without asking any questions except to her. And then she tells us the answers and it's awesome. Narrow AI has a predefined range of commands and replies. Other examples are Google Translate or how your email automatically filters for spam. Those are narrow AI. Very common, very useful. Next group, intermediates. General AI or AGI, also sometimes called strong AI, which is confusing because we're in the intermediate group. Anyways, general / strong AI can learn anything that a human can. For this to be possible, AGI would need self-awareness and a consciousness. We're still a ways away from that. That's the heartening part. Like, the work is happening, and the work is happening fast, thanks hugely to supercomputers and the current AI models like ChatGPT that are learning and learning and learning from us all the time. Funny true story, pause. Speaking of AI in the context of dancers and choreographers and chatbots, a while ago, my agent and I set out to rewrite my bio, and I wrote one from scratch from my human brain, which is not my favorite thing to do. And my agent asked ChatGPT to write one. And I wound up using little bits of both and having a little hybrid bio. That was weird to me at first, but then I got over it because I don't love writing my bio. And I know a whole lot of people who truly struggle to do this. It's a big block for them professionally and emotionally. They get weird about it. Some of them pay other people to do it. So perhaps for movement people, here is one area of business that we would love to have some AI assistance. I'm curious though, what do you think about that? Have you ever had AI write you a bio? DM me because I want to read it and I'm curious. Okay. So that's our intermediate group, general AI / strong AI. Up next, the big advanced group, artificial superintelligence, or ASI, sometimes just called super AI. We haven't achieved this yet. The only examples that we can really point to are the hypothetical examples that we see in big science fiction movies, like the talking, reasoning robots from Star Wars or Chappie, which is like my favorite, and I'm overdue for a watch. I'm going to definitely put that on the list. If you know me, you know that I love some science fiction movies. And that's really the stuff that we're talking about. We're talking about technology that's completely self-aware that could hypothetically turn on humanity and wipe us out, which is why this is a love-hate for me, because although I do love science fiction movies, I also love humans and humanity. And I love, especially in art, the human fingerprint, the flaws, the signature bits that tell me a person was here or a specific person was here. Whoa. Okay. Those are the three capability categories for AI: narrow, general or strong, and super. Are you still with me? We're going to pause because that's kind of a lot. And we're going to take an intermission to talk about why you should care about this. Dance types. I recently visited OpenAI's website. For those who don't know, OpenAI is an artificial intelligence research organization whose goal is to, quote, research and develop safe and beneficial AI. I think safe and beneficial are relative. And we're going to talk about that more later. Oh, speaking of that, OpenAI and all of its fun, cool AI models are featured in a Hollywood Reporter article that came out today. I'm going to link to it because there's some good, scary subject matter in there. Anyways, right there on the homepage of OpenAI is an introduction to its newest AI model called Sora. AI creates, and I quote, realistic and imaginative scenes from text instructions. Yes, this is fully AI video, like short video clips created from a text prompt. For example, I watched a video of a very real looking woman walking down the street in Tokyo. I watched a flock of golden retriever puppies playing in the snow. I And I also watched a cartoon kangaroo dancing. The prompt that was actually fed into the AI was actually, quote, a cartoon kangaroo disco dances. And Sora spit out a kangaroo dancing, a cartoon kangaroo dancing. Philosophical question. Was the kangaroo freestyling or was he doing choreography? Because there was no choreographer. So is it choreography? Is it freestyle? The kangaroo is not free. It isn't human or even real. But Sora learned what dance looks like from studying or ingesting many, many dance videos authored by many, many choreographers and dancers, and then had this idea of what dance is. But what really blows my mind is that, yes, there was a cartoon and he was a kangaroo and he happened to be moving his little kangaroo limbs, aka dancing. But this was not disco by any means. I, and my professional eye, know what disco looks like. I didn't happen to be there for it, but I've learned from some of the people who were, and that kangaroo is clearly not one of them. And his dance teacher, Sora, who's been fed a lot of dance, but not disco dance, or possibly was fed disco dance, but was never told the difference between disco dance and other dance. Yeah, Sora was not there for disco. So herein lies the very important element about why choreographers should care about this. A choreographer that's worth a damn should know what disco is and what disco isn't if their job is asking for disco dance. And furthermore, more important and more exciting to me, more heartening, is that when I think of disco, all of it, the music, the movement, and the subculture around it, that was created by humans. I believe that to create a new cultural movement and to create movement like dance moves for that specific moment, humans must be involved. Humans must have their human fingers on the pulse of other humans experiencing the human shit in a human world and creating from that human place. I think that's what culture is. And that's just what I think today. And I get that because all humans are pretty much always connected to our phones and taking videos of all of our humanness, it's just moments between the creation of a cultural shift and the moment where AI is fed data pertaining to that cultural shift. So then AI could, you know, recreate that. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I believe dancers and choreographers create cultural impact. And that AI, at least the narrow AI that we're dealing with today, simply recreates it. Are you still with me? Christ. I don't know actually if I'm still with me, but we're going to start moving a little bit faster. Buckle up. Okay, we're getting into the second round of groups here at this audition of AI. The first round of groups was capability-based, beginning, intermediate, and advanced. Narrow, general strong, and super AI. Now we're jumping into the functionality round. And in my metaphor, style, like freestyle, jazz, lyrical, it's not going to hold up. But anyways, here we go. 4 functionality-based AI groups. This is based on how AI applies information it has learned to process data or respond to stimuli. In general, how it responds to its and interacts with its environment. First group here. First type of functional AI is reactive. It's capable of responding to external stimuli, like in real time, but unable to build memory or store information for the future, for future uses. For example, any of your streaming platforms like Spotify or Netflix is a good example, which processes your liked and watched or listened, viewed history. And based on that history, will recommend future likes, right? So yeah, this kind of algorithmic reactive AI. The next group is called limited memory AI. That can input and store knowledge and use it to train for future tasks. This will probably be the biggest of the 4 groups at the audition. Various apps, chatbots, or like personal virtual assistants, that can remember information about you and cater their feedback just for you. Also, self-driving cars and robots or cobots, things like that, that store information. Those are limited memory AI. Big group. The next group, I like this. This is an interesting concept to me. Theory of mind AI. This is AI that can sense or respond to human emotions and also do all of the things that limited memory AI can do. A good example of this that I read about is, take for example, a driverless car, an AI vehicle, sure. Probably safer than a human driver most of the time. But what the human driver has is knowledge or emotional sensibility that, for example, the neighbor boy who lives on the corner who plays basketball and isn't very good at it, plays basketball outside close to the street. Declan is his name. No offense, Declan. I'm sorry. But the human driver thinks, oh, this is the time of day where Declan might be outside playing basketball. I should slow down. A human can do that, but an AI can't quite yet. But if it could, that's what we would call theory of mind AI. It could make decision and have reference for or in response to emotional human stuff. With me? Final group here, self-aware AI. Again, this is the stuff of science fiction movies. AI that can recognize other human emotions, plus has a sense of its own feelings, has a sense of its own self, its own being, and has some emotional intelligence. Whoa. We're not there yet, again. But if we look at like some of our favorite examples, like C-3PO and R2-D2 from Star Wars, or The Terminator, or HAL from 2001 Space Odyssey, if we venture into the slightly less terrifying science fiction world, Her, the movie Her, Samantha, which is the character played by Scarlett Johansson, she was lovely. I would definitely fall in love with AI if it was Scarlett Johansson. Anyways, most of those science fiction films are focused on the horrors of AI becoming emotionally aware and wiping out humanity. But at this stage, developments in AI are still kind of exciting, if not kind of novel and sort of frivolous. Take, for example, this image of podcast guest Tobias L. Hammer and me as Sam and Frodo from Lord of the Rings. You're welcome for that. And thank you, AI. I think some people would say that AI is beyond fun and call it useful. This tool can and arguably will advance our society far beyond what you and I ever imagined capable. Kind of like 20 years ago, nobody would have guessed that picking up a phone could mean that you can ask it what the weather is going to be like for the next 3 days in London and it would tell you. I do imagine that this technology could be useful for choreographers and dancers. Like never having to update my resume on all those ridiculous casting platforms. If AI could just automatically populate my latest gigs across all profiles, that would be a dream. Also, if I never had to make a reel again, I bet AI would make a bitchin' reel for me, and I bet it would update it every time I pooped out a new work. That would be great. Networking would probably be easier. I'm imagining asking AI who the director was from that Target commercial that I did for Mandy Moore like X years ago, or how many years ago was that? And AI could probably tell me, yes, that was 7 years ago, and yeah, that was Roman Coppola. Subtle flex right there, because it really was. What if AI could keep like one giant web of all the people who were ever on a call sheet with you or all the people you've ever worked with? I'm also thinking AI could be extremely helpful in the casting process for choreographers in keeping a like front of mind database for all the people I've ever seen or worked with. It's kind of hard actually for my human brain to keep all the people in one place. I bet AI could create some pretty stunning previs videos, or even show me exactly what a shot would look like on location just based on my rehearsal footage so that I could make changes based on the location and be more effective on the day, more time efficient. I don't know. I can imagine many uses for AI, and I can also imagine endless misuses for AI and people working in our field. And That is why I'm so thrilled to be working in the Choreographers Guild. Our stellar leadership is working with leaders from other fields, and we're working to put up some guide rails that will protect our work. And by work, I mean jobs. I believe that dancers and choreographers are tastemakers and that we lead cultural shifts. And that is part of the work of the entertainment industry because its reach is broad and because it is our job to influence. We're on what we might call the bleeding edge, and we may be among the first to be affected from changes brought upon by AI. But AI will affect every single industry that there is. I have a final thought. I think that many fundamental elements of our culture are uniquely human, like fashion and music and especially dance, because I cannot think of something more human than to dance. Yeah, I think you could probably argue that birds and some other animals have like mating rituals that look like dance, or you could probably say that the leaves are dancing in the wind on the tree branch, but that's not what I'm talking about. Consider that a human baby will bounce and wiggle to the sound of music before they know the meaning of the word dance, before they know what art is, and certainly before videos of them are being fed into AI models. AI might be able to poop out something that looks like dance, but it cannot feel how it feels to be dancing. Yet, and that scares me a little bit, but you, human being, can feel what it feels like to be dancing, and you can create more dance from that feeling, from that being of dancing. And that AI cannot do. So please go out there into the world and dance your human self, and also leave a review or rating if you are digging the podcast. Smash the likes, hit subscribe, leave a subscription review rating. You understand. I'll get better at that. Of course, as always, keep it funky, and I will talk to you soon. Either me or some AI robot will talk to you soon. This podcast was produced by me with the help of many. Big love to our executive assistant and editor, Riley Higgins. Our communications manager is Ori Vajadares. Our music is by Max Winnie. Logo and brand design by Brie Reitz. Thumbnails and marketing by Fiona Small. You can make your tax-deductible donations to Words That Move Me, thanks to our fiscal sponsor, the Dance Resource Center. And also, many thanks to you. I'm so glad you're here. And if you're digging the pod, please share it. Leave a review and rating. And if you want to coach with me and the many marvelous members of the Words That Move Me community, visit wordsthatmoveme.com. If you're simply curious to know more about me and the work I do outside of this podcast, visit thedanawilson.com.